This is an interview with Frank M. Strong on March 1st, 1983.
Yes, you did. I got 229. I got
9:13. At 9:13 in the morning, we're in the new wing of the biochemistry building. I'm Laura Smale, and we'll start.
Jordy, J-O-R-D-Y, I think was his name. Mm-hmm. Oh boy, that's a long time ago. let me tell you a little thing. When I first got in Granite to live in Britain, they put me in. And the next year, I don't know, I must have been about so big, I went down to the school and wandered around. I didn't know where I was supposed to be, and one of the teachers asked me, and I said, I didn't know, so she put me in the same room again. I went through first grade twice. But then when it came to 7 and 8, I did them so I was even.
Yeah.
And then in high school, I got through in 3 years. So it was 1924, when I, let's see, is that right? No. Yeah, that's correct. And I went into Syracuse University, and I graduated in 28. And just shortly before that, I got married and had a little baby.
Oh.
So I decided to stay on there for another year and get a master's degree. In chemistry, mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it was sort of chemistry for the master's, but not quite pure chemistry.
Uh-huh.
It was a matter of the professor had been trying to utilize powdered aluminum as a source of a very hot fire. There is a procedure that the people on the railroads use to fuse their pieces of the rail together, you know.
Uh-huh.
I've kind of forgotten just what the name of that stuff is, but it's a mixture of the powdered aluminum and some kind of a chemical that when you first heat it up a little bit, it gives off oxygen.
Uh-huh.
And you have a very quick hot fire, and it melts the iron together. Gee, I should know the name of that, but I think I'm getting Alzheimer's disease.
Oh, I just read about that.
It doesn't come out. Incidentally, in the next to the last issue of Science magazine, there's a very important article. They seem to have found out now what part of the brain goes bad to produce this disease. And that is the beginning, I think, of possibly doing something for it.
Yeah, it's a terrible thing,
yeah,
to lose memory.
Somebody but down in Johns Hopkins, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, then, as I say, I finished up my master's in the spring of 29,
uh-huh.
And I got a job down at DuPont's for the winter, for the summer, at $250 a month.
Uh-huh.
And meanwhile, one of the professors there in the chemistry department, Syracuse, knew Homer Atkins over here in organic chemistry, a good friend.
Yeah.
And I guess maybe one or two other students. My professor when I was working on this master's degree was a man named Baker. He knew Atkins and Maloche, and I guess maybe McElvain. All these people are long dead, of course. McElvain was my major.
He was one of the outstanding chemists, wasn't he?
Yeah, very much so.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I got one of these teaching assistants things, you know, so I could have a little money to keep my family going.
Mm.
And I came out here.
To get a PhD.
Yeah, got here in the fall of 29.
Uh-huh.
And then in the spring of 32, I got my degree. And of course, you know what happened between 29 and 32. You
yes.
were there too, maybe.
Yes, I was there.
Well, by the time I got my PhD, I had three children. Incidentally, you might be interested in a little expansion on that. I have now five grown-up children. Mm-hmm. The youngest one is about 39, 40. And he is a homosexual, as a matter of fact. Oh. The only one in the whole group that's anything diverted. And he is a Unitarian minister in Maine, Augusta, Maine. And he's very good at it. He has got double the congregation that was there before he came. Hmm. He's very likable and intelligent and so on. And then my oldest daughter lives here in town. She has five children. And then the next child was a boy. He got a PhD here in entomology and plant pathology. And after that, he got a professorship out in Davis, California. Oh. He was there for 10 years or so. it must have been longer than that, because about the time the Vietnam War came along, he had two boys that were not quite old enough to be drafted, but might be. So they all picked up stakes and moved to Canada on Vancouver Island and bought a farm there. It's a kind of a truck farm, carrots and, you know, cabbages and corn and cauliflower and all that kind of stuff. And but now he's gone over more to fruits. And instead of having to clean up the stuff and take it to the store, and the store gets a cut, now the people come to him. See, he's a smart guy.
Yeah.
He had to he was asked by the...
So you came here to the chemistry department in 19...
From the chem department, I came over here.
But I meant you came to the university, to the chemistry department.
That's right, yeah.
And you studied with McIlvaine. Could you say something about him as a teacher?
Oh, yes, yeah, he was very good. He was extremely intelligent, he figured things out very, very well. Incidentally, he got me started in the investments. Oh. I bought a couple hundred shares of Eastman Kodak on his recommendation. I just sold them here about 3-4 months ago. Well, anyhow, I had been interested in local anesthetics. He was trying to synthesize something based on the structure of what is the natural one that's an anesthetic?
Ether.
All I can think of is cocaine, but that's not it.
Ether.
Huh?
Ether.
Oh, no, not, that's a gas, of course. Mm. Look, but this is a solid.
Opium.
No, that's a drug. It's not a... It's a... cocaine sounds somewhat similar. I have my thesis around here somewhere.
Well, it doesn't...
Up.
Anyway, he was working on it.
Yeah, well, he put me on that that project. And my assignment was to prepare, go through various steps of synthetic making the kind of chemical you wanted, that he thought would be somewhat similar to the natural one. I mean, he'd had several of them. Novocaine is one that he had developed.
Oh, really?
Actually, yeah. Well, in being able to start off on this synthetic procedure that I was supposed to do, I had to have some nicotinic acid. Nicotinic acid is... you want me to show you pictures? That's that's crude nicotine.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to add that in a big ceramic dish and put in some concentrated nitric acid, which is a strong oxidizing agent. Well, I warmed it up under a hood till it started to boil a little bit, or started to give off some yellow fumes. And then I closed the thing and backed off, because pretty soon it was going up like the devil. Well, what happens was, I forgot to put these in. This part was taken away, just burned off, and it left it with this part. See? Oh. So that's why I made my nicotinic acid. Well, then this was a starting point. I had to make an ester, and I'd go on from there. Well, later on, I'll tell you about my work with Professor Elvium here in relation to what we call now niacin, the essential vitamin, to prevent people from getting... there, now here, I'm stuck again.
Well, pellagra. You're not talking about the pellagra research.
Pellagra, yeah, the anti-pellagra vitamin. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was discovered here in this building.
Yes.
Well, I had a little part in that.
Ah.
You see, you don't have to have the natural vitamin, which is essential for life, for animals and people, has this structure. It has a nitrogen instead of an OH on the end here. Yeah, see, COOH.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of that OH part, which is just a simple acid, this is a it's an ammonia molecule with one hydrogen taken off and hooked onto this carbon. It's a little more understandable if you put in the valence bonds. That's the structure there, and over here the structure is like that. See, this OH is taken off and this is put on.
Okay.
Well, that can be done in the body. So you can use either the amide, the acid, or the ester. Now, this could be a methyl group out here, and the body takes care of it.
How did you happen to come over to biochemistry?
Well, I had a wife and three children, and no income. So I, being chemistry and kind of interested in living things, I came over, and this was a agricultural chemistry at that time, to see if I could find something to make a little money. And finally, old Professor Peterson took me on, $750 for the first year.
This is why you were still being a graduate student.
No, I was a PhD.
Oh, you were finished with that.
Oh, heck yes. I was a full-fledged PhD.
Well, was it a war grant?
I jumped at that. $750 for the first, I guess maybe it was the first semester. I've kind of forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, it was enough so we could get by. At that time, we...
was it a Worth grant? Do you know?
Pardon me?
This was it a grant from the WARF, the Wisconsin Alumni Research Foundation?
Where the money came from?
Yes, your grant.
I don't know. I can't remember. I didn't ask any questions like that.
Yeah.
But I remember that the next year, that was so bad that all faculty were required to take a waiver voluntarily. 10%.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that second year, I got raised to $1,000. And is that right? No, something was wrong here. Anyway, old Professor Hart, E.B. Hart, who was a grand old man, he put in a request that I wouldn't apply that to me because
really?
I was so damn poor.
Oh,
and it wasn't
nice.
Applied.
Hmm.
So I liked him too. Well, both Pete was a little... annoying sometimes, but nevertheless, he was a fine man.
How was he annoying?
Pardon?
How was he annoying?
How was he what?
You say he was annoying at times.
Well,
what ways?
Well, can't tell you specifically. I just more or less remember it. I can't recall really now. You got me caught. He was a grand old fellow, but he wanted his own way. Oh. And Marv Johnson was one of his PhDs. Marv was a genius. He was very, very excellent man. Did a lot of good work. They were in this fermentation business, you know. Mm-hmm. Both very good at it. Let's see now. Where were we?
Well, you're working with Peterson doing research. You were a research assistant, is that right? Or what were you called?
I was essentially a teaching assistant.
Teaching assistant.
Like I was before I got my PhD degree. And Professor Peterson had been teaching this book. This was the textbook for his course. It was intended primarily for home ec girls and nurses.
I see, yeah.
Sort of food and a lot of things. And there were a lot of students in that course. We taught downstairs in the laboratory and gave a lecture in the big room, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, Pete gave the lectures and sort of oversaw the laboratory work, but I was in charge of the laboratory work from the time I came over. And there was, as I say, a lot of students. Each one had a big top, and here and there was a place to keep stuff in, mm-hmm, so on. Mm-hmm. Each had one of those. Well, see, this thing had been gone way back. Peterson came here from out in Geneva, New York, mm-hmm, on that place where they studied about fruits primarily. He came out here, I think it was around 1920 or 15, along there somewhere. But anyway, he started this thing. It was, first printing was in 43, so that's not as far back as I thought, maybe. Yeah, well, anyway, I worked in his laboratory on some research topics that he had going, and used my chemical knowledge as well as I could. I didn't know anything about fermentation and that sort of stuff. Well, then, went along, and after another year, I got raised fairly good, and we got into a lot of stuff. I think the best way for you to get a picture of this, let me show you what I've written up for my own benefit. I've had it around for a long time, and you might just take a little while in relation to this business here. As I said, the Steenbach was a fly off the handle and just ball out the students for apparently very little reason. But I guess was a little more careful. Seemed to get along with him reasonably well. Well, he had all the money he needed, and so he wanted to get a piece of glass apparatus to carry out some sort of analysis. I don't quite remember what it was, but anyhow, it didn't seem to work very well. So it was sitting around, and I asked him if I could have it. Not that I wanted the whole thing to use the way it was supposed to be used, but because there was a glass outfit sitting on a support, pretty good sized thing, with a lot of tubes around and so forth. Well, when I got my master's degree, the guy, the professor I had, was quite interested in glass blowing, and I got and studied a little over there too. And then when I was over in the chemistry department, I kind of kept it up. So I developed a little ability, but not a whole lot. Mm-hmm. So I asked the professor, what's your name?
Steenbach.
That whether, if he wasn't using it, could I have it? And he let me to take it. Well, it had on it a device to produce a very low pressure, very extremely low, down to the point where it would be a millionth of the normal pressure that we live on, something of that sort. And there's a process called molecular distillation that requires this very low pressure, and it requires that the sample to be distilled goes in, goes into a glass. Let me take, is that, that's your pen? Mine.
Yeah, it's mine. There's your pen.
Oh, that's good. I put it on the back here. Glass with these fittings, you know, that the glassware goes together?
Oh. No.
Yeah. Well, we'd have something like that with the sample down in the bottom here. The material that we wanted to purify by this process. Well, then up above, you had another thing that fitted in here. That's another one of these rings. But it was a solid bottom. And this, again, fitted in from up above to the vacuum system. Pull out the pressure. No, wait, that can't be quite right. This has to be evacuated down below. That Professor Sartre Milgram had been studying this business about the... tell me again the name of the disease.
Pellagra.
Pellagra, yeah. Well, they had discovered, or other people perhaps previously had discovered, that the dogs get the same disease pretty much. They had the same symptoms, particularly with the tongue, inflamed and bad. So they had gotten a whole group of rather small dogs, so they wouldn't have to feed them so much, up in the attic over there. And they tried feeding different diets so that they would get the disease or not get it. And they came shortly to the conclusion, which I guess people had known, that a regular good diet, you wouldn't get the pellagra. Well, they had a diet that would produce a canine pellagra and could be avoided if they gave the dogs some liver. And Elvium had a friend in one of the big meat outfits in Chicago. And this friend was willing to take a large amount of liver, grind it up and put it in a tank with some water, stir it all up good, and then strain the water off and then leave the insoluble part behind. Then they took filtrate, the liquid part, and evaporated it down to a very thick molasses-like stuff, and sent that up here.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. Well, obviously, whatever it was that cured or prevented the pellagra was in that concentrate, because they just give them a little in their ratio and the ration, and the dogs would be healthy. So the problem was to find out which particular substance in there was doing the job. It's almost unbelievable how many individual chemical substances there are in living things, hundreds of thousands of them. Mm. Well, how do you find out? See? Yeah. That is the line that I decided to adopt as soon as I got kind of settled over here. Mm. I got to be... I went through all the different layers that you can get, see, up to a full professorship.
When were you actually made an assistant professor? Do you remember?
I think I do. I wonder if I have this here.
professor. I think, let me see. Well, the way it went, I came over here in 32. Oh. And I worked with Pete a couple, 3 years. And then I got the idea that I would like to go abroad and study with some of the outstanding European professors who were doing the same sorts of things that I was interested in. And the people around here supported me, and I got a Rockefeller Fellowship. And I left my family out in Burton, nearby. My wife came from a little town called Cicero, just north of it. Mm-hmm. No, just south of it. I went to Switzerland and studied under Professor Paul Karrer, K-A-R-R-E-R, a Nobel Prize man, for about a year in Zurich. And then I went over to Utrecht, Holland, and studied with Professor Kogel, K-O-U-M-L-O-G-L. And he was famous for being able to work with very, very tiny amounts of material, if you couldn't get any more. He had a young German woman in the laboratory who was the one who operated this, and when something came out, all the students congratulated her. Anyhow, I stayed there for about 8 months, I guess it was, and came back home. And I learned a great deal. And, I think it was very shortly after I came back home in 1936, I'm pretty sure. And it was only a year or two after that that they made me assistant professor.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. I am pretty sure it was before 1940. Mm-hmm. And then I moved up pretty well. It didn't take me so very long to get to be a professor. I can bring you all those dates if you want them.
Well, it'd be useful to have. What was the situation with equipment in the biochemistry department in the 1930s?
You made your own, pretty much.
You made your own?
Well, you know, a simple glass blowing stuff. I taught I developed a class later on. You see, this business about figuring out what that chemical is in the soup from the liver that I was talking about, that is a tricky business. And as I was going to say, when I came over here and got kind of settled, at least when I got back from abroad, I decided that I would follow that line. And in order to get the problems to work on, I undertook to cooperate with professors all over the campus who were interested in such things, particularly in this side, but also over in botany and zoology, dealing with living things. And living things have to have pretty delicate stuff, you know, to keep them going.
So you went and talked to these, to people?
my most important discoveries were done jointly with Hart and Elvia. We finished it off and found out, I can tell you about it a little later. And the other most important discovery was one with Professor Folke Skoog.
Yes.
This one was for the pellagra vitamin, and the one with him was what we call, I think we called it chinidin. Maybe that's been, the name is may have been changed. But anyhow, it is a substance that promotes cell division in plants. And that's a very fundamental thing.
Yeah.
They have to have it.
Mm-hmm. What was Folke Skoog? Hold on, I've got to change the How was it working with him? How did you work together?
Well, Folke was studying plant materials that
kind of an amorphous form, just a mass of white stuff. They have a name for that.
Remember?
I've forgotten. Pardon me. Well, he was trying to get a whole plant to come out of one of this, looks like a piece of cauliflower, the part that you eat.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the technical name of it. But anyway, there's more things I can't remember than I can. Anyway, after trying a lot of different mixtures.
Did you go over there to his building and work with him?
No, I did. We did the manipulation laboratory work at this building.
Yeah, he came over here.
we walked back and forth for discussions.
I see, but you worked separately.
Doing, he was doing the part of growing the stuff.
I see.
He'd fussed around with different mixtures of solution, put this amorphous stuff in there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he found out after a while that if you put in some coconut milk, it'd grow.
Ah.
They put out leaves and stuff and you have a plant. So there it is, just like this was the liver. So you have to find out what's in there,
does it?
So, I had to have, if I was going to find this stuff, I had to have a pretty good quantity of coconut milk.
Mm-hmm.
And my laboratory at that time was on the lower floor over in this corner.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a pile of coconuts like this. And I had all my grad students cracking them open and getting coconut milk.
I see.
Out. Well, and then we evaporated it down, and go through these different purification procedures, and each time took the product of that treatment over to folk community to see if it worked or not.
Yeah.
So little by little we'd trace it and get it more nearly purified, as evidenced by the smaller and smaller amount that it took to make the effect.
Yeah.
Well, that was a long kind of a hard procedure, just going blind. But it so happened that Cokie had a postdoc who was a very smart character, and he thought, well, why don't we try some of these things that are in the bottles around?
Mm.
And one of those was a mixture of
well, that part doesn't matter to me, because it's written up, I presume. I mean, that would be written up.
It was, something that came from a living animal.
Mm-hmm.
I guess these were fish or crayfish or something like that. Anyhow, we tried a little of the stuff, and it turned out to be very potent.
Mm.
And so that's what we worked on afterwards.
Who was this graduate student?
Let's look. I can't remember all his names. I can't remember hardly anything.
You did?
And he doesn't mind at all. Let's see where it is over here. I'm sorry, I don't see the preliminary thing. We were part of this at the American Chemical Society meeting,
mm-hmm.
of course,
mm-hmm.
and there was a little short article like this that is in there somewhere. Well, it really made a furor. DuPont boys threw on a dozen or so people to. We found out, well, I guess in that first article, we didn't know what the chemical was. We knew that it worked.
Yeah.
And maybe it had to be purified more before we could find out the actual structure,
mm-hmm.
which I accomplished by putting it through a column. I had to give a talk on this over in the botany building. And the news had gone around somewhat earlier, so the place was filled up. And I don't remember in detail just how I went about this, but I gave some background and what we're doing and so forth. And got a pretty active concentrate, and finally got this material. I guess that was, no, it doesn't sound quite right, but whoever it was had found, and we'd concentrated it some more. And then finally we put it through one of these long columns, mm-hmm. and I said that I was watching, and I noticed as the material moved down through, I could see some little kind of sparkles. It looked like there was some crystals there.
Mm.
So I said, well, I took out the beaker from below, put in a clean beaker, and the crystals fell into it.
Mm.
That was it.
Really?
Well, I drove brought the house down.
Yeah.
That was just kind of foolishness. Anyhow, everybody that grows anything is interested in this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the major, it's like a vitamin for an animal, but growth factors, there's about four for plants, and this is one of them. And the others, I don't know what the heck they are at all. I get too many things in my head all at once,
yeah.
And they get mixed up.
Well, that will be written up. That...
Well, I wanted to tell you a little more about the ending of this. Logan and Hart had had at least four different PhDs on that one problem, getting a little closer and a little closer. That is more highly purified material from the from the liver. And they got it down so it was very potent, but it was still kind of like a molasses-looking stuff, and obviously not a single substance. Well, I rigged this thing up down in my lab down below there, and put a little sample down in the bottom here, and turned on the vacuum, and put some warm water in here. We didn't know how much heat it would take, and let it go for several hours. Well, then I released the vacuum so I could take this down, and at the bottom of this, I forgot to tell you that this was all full of dry ice and chloroform. It gives you a very, very cold surface, and that would hold the whatever went up there.
Uh-huh.
Well, on the bottom of this thing, there was a thin film of a pure, colorless, rather viscous material that had gone up there. Well, I got through that with about, I guess it was about time to go home for supper.
Mm.
And it so happened that there was a young man who had come here from Canada. He was highly recommended by the professor who had got his bachelor's degree. But he was a sickly person. He had diabetes, and eventually he went blind and so forth. But he was just about a genius.
Mm.
He was, perhaps 20 or so, very thin, sort of. Lived over on Breeze Terrace and he'd walk back and forth. But that's the only thing he did, was the lab and sleep.
Yeah.
Well, the students would come in and ask him questions, you know. I mean the grad students, what to do this or that. And I went home, and then I gave him that stuff. And he hadn't had anything to do with this before. And he applied some tests to it, and it turned out that it was an amine. That's this part on the end, NH2. Sure enough, he got some very nice white crystals came down. So he filtered those off and dried them and took the melting point. Well, that gave some indication, but you couldn't really tell what it was from just that one thing, a certain temperature where it melted. And it so happened that Professor Link had, before that, a year or so, he'd been in Europe too. And he went particularly because he wanted to find how a famous chemical analytical man in Europe was able to carry out analyses with very, very tiny amounts of material. Mm-hmm. And when he came back, he set the whole thing up in his laboratory and gave a lecture on it here to people that weren't familiar with it. He could take a few milligrams, for example. And ordinarily in organic chemistry, when I was a student over there, you'd have a spoonful of stuff.
Yeah.
And you'd have to burn it and catch the carbon dioxide and the water. And if there was nitrogen, you'd have to find that some way or other. Well, Link had one student that he just had to do that and nothing else. And this one downstairs, whose name is on the tip of my tongue, but anyway, it makes no difference. The two of them worked all night and they got the analysis done. They determined the amount of the carbon and hydrogen and nitrogen. This is a different analysis, but these two come from the thing. And they assumed that the rest of the molecule was oxygen. No, there wasn't any oxygen. There is one oxygen. In the amide, you have to have one oxygen. Well, anyway, from the percentages of these three, and they had no direct determination of oxygen, but that's the difference between the sum of these and 100. Mm-hmm. So with all those percentages, you could calculate then what the empirical formula was. I'll figure it out. They knew right off what it was.
Yeah.
So the next day, Elvium and Link and Hart and everybody else knew about it too.
How did you establish who got the credit for this work?
Well, I got my name on, and the young lad who dead no, but he and I and Hart and Elvium were the authors of the announcement. That, of course, they tested the thing, this little sample.
Yeah.
And you knew that it was very highly potent.
This, what you're talking about now is the pellagra.
Yep.
Substance. I see.
Yep. Yep. Well, that was very significant. There's a young doctor over here that, near where we live that came to our house one time and we had quite a little talk. And it seemed that it was definite that he worked in one of the big hospitals in Birmingham. Is that the name of it, down in
Alabama?
Alabama, yeah. Mm-hmm. One of our best professors is down there now. Wells, Bob Wells. Do you know him?
No.
Yeah, well, he was your full professor and a very good man. He's ahead now of the biochemistry department at the University of Alabama in Birmingham.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there was a man down there that was working with human beings on this problem, named Speeds.
Yeah.
Quite a well-known person. And he and Elvium collaborated a good deal with each other. So, of course, Elvium informed Speeds about this right away. And this, you can buy this stuff in a chemical place, easy enough. So they started it on people. And this doctor, the young doctor, was there at that time. And he said the results were miraculous.
Wow.
Oh, they just blossomed
compared
to the troubles they were having. So that's very significant. That's the most significant little piece of work. It would have been done anyhow, but it got done a little quicker this way.
Mm-hmm.
As I say, they'd worked on it for years and years. A lot of different people around, all trying to get it done.
Yeah. Were you working nights and weekends then yourself?
Oh, you're damn right. For the first 2-3 years when I was over here, we lived out on University Avenue about 6-8 blocks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I walked back and forth. Saturdays, Sundays, holidays.
Oh.
I was right after it.
Yeah.
I had to be.
Yeah. They all were here.
Well, I walked.
Were they all here? I mean, the others too?
No, not necessarily. There's a variation of how keep your nose on the grindstone. Mm-hmm. But I like to work. Mm.
I understood that when Hart resigned the chairmanship,
Yalvium took it over.
But Link was hoping that Steenbach would become chairman. Did you know anything about that?
Well, if he did, he was nuts.
Oh.
I never heard that before.
Maybe it was a joke, do you think?
Anyway, another thing about KP was that he claimed that he discovered the anti-pellagra vitamin because of the work that was done in his lab.
Ah.
E.B. Fredis set him down on his fanny fast.
He wasn't right.
Well, Link didn't have a damn thing to do with it, except that he happened to have that equipment up there where this could be done.
I see.
And anybody could do it, you know.
One of his students, you said.
If these two boys hadn't been up there, well, they were young men.
Yeah.
If it added analyzed there, it could have been analyzed anywhere. It's a routine thing.
Mm.
And KP, I mean, E.B. Hart and Elvium had gone through years and years and years of this stuff, and at least 4 PhDs out of it. They made little progress each time. Then there was another grad student who had been working with Elvium, but he was kind of messy in the lab, and he wasn't too bright, I guess, or didn't seem very good. So anyhow, Elvium finally told him that he couldn't continue any longer. Well, this just as soon as this came out, very shortly after that, this was, I almost had his name on me. Madden, yeah. Bob, M-A-D-D-E-N, I think it is. It's pretty close. Well, he wrote a little sort of a pamphlet-like booklet and claimed the discovery of this thing himself, just by his mind. This is a piece of one of the enzymes that is necessary in the body, and Fenoiler and Carrer had pretty well decided what the active ingredients, part that does the work. See, there's a long protein, and there's a certain section that a lot of the vitamins, I think, operate that way. And they had found that this structure was a part of it, see. So Madden, having found that out, he claimed that he had recommended this here, but nobody paid him any attention or something like that.
Yeah.
Van Potter, who's a friend of yours, I guess.
Well, I'm planning to interview him. He's not...
Well, he got pretty mad about this.
Had he had any part in it?
Pardon?
Did he have any role in this work?
Well, he didn't get his name on the paper. He did have his name on some of the preliminary papers that were up the road.
But he was working on this.
He had been. But Elvium got so mad because his place was so cluttered.
No, I mean Van Potter.
Van had no part in it.
Oh. Why did he get mad then?
Well, because he didn't think that Madden had any right to make such a claim.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't get any recognition for it. Well, I didn't do very much. I kept my mouth shut. Anyhow, it did do the trick, though.
Mm-hmm. But Elvium got the patent on it.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. It was Elvium's.
Was there a patent on it? I don't know whether it was patented or not.
Well, I say that. I don't know. I'm not sure it went through war.
This patent that DeLuca got on the 125 dihydroxy vitamin D3 is pulling in the money hand over fist.
Is it?
You familiar with that?
No.
Yeah. Well, it is. You see, when the vitamin D enters the body, this is what...
Yes, I do know about that. It was just written up. I know, I see. Yeah. I've read about it.
Yeah, they they isolated it, and then Snow's, you know, who was primarily an organic chemist, and helped them to figure out the structure.
Yeah.
And it was patented. And then Alton LaRoche in New Jersey figured out a synthetic way to make it. Mm-hmm. So now it's available in large quantities. Yeah. However, it's not available very cheaply. My wife has had, she's been asthmatic for 20, 25 years. And poor woman has been so sick. It was back in 1980 it was in April that she began to have severe pains in her back. And fellow came over, the doctor came over, was supposed to know about asthma, and had a hot pad under her back, that's all. Well, didn't get any better, it got worse. And so Dr. Sims, Leroy Sims, I don't know if you happen to know him or not, he's a good friend of ours. he took her down to the university laboratory, and they, of course, x-rayed her and did the CAT scanning and all that kind of stuff. Turned out that three of her vertebrae had just kind of crumbled. So any movement, there's no protection for the nerves coming out of the spinal column. And that's what made the pain. And she was in and out of the hospital there during 81, I think.
Department. Really? Yeah. What was her name? Did she go under this name? Strong.
Not until she was married.
No, I mean.
We were married 25 years ago last December.
Oh, this is a second wife then?
Yeah.
I see.
Oh, yeah. I had a lot of troubles after a while. First 10, 12, 15 years, not too bad. But when it got time so that I was able to get to be a professor, my wife's family were very upset. They thought I wouldn't make enough money to please them. I told them to go to hell. And well, we got along pretty well. I lived with this first wife for 27 years. I didn't want to leave when I had little children. When I did leave, the youngest one was 14, I believe. And then a couple of years later, I married Dorothy. Well, I thought of this, all this in relation to the calcitriol. That's the trade name.
Is that going to help her?
It seems to have done quite a bit, at least as far as the bones are concerned.
Yeah.
But I was going to say about how they're getting money over there. This little pill about so big costs 70 cents. And the dose for one day is three of them. And you take them every day.
Yeah.
It's for osteoporosis. This is essentially osteoporosis. And of course, the university gets 85% of the money that's taken in. I had some patents over there too, but none that ever amounted to very much financially. However, this was a quite interesting chemically and scientifically. I worked on any kind of a natural substance that had a profound effect on something that's alive.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these are two we've discussed.
Yeah.
There are others that are just the opposite. Terrible poisons.
Well, this is what's written up in this paper that you're going to Xerox, is that right?
I think so. Did you notice it there?
Yeah, I mean, you described, so
I think I can get one of these made for you by before noon.
Well, I can just,
then I'll still have this.
Yeah.
It wouldn't take you 10 minutes to do this.
Okay. but you had to walk a long way, don't you?
Ah, my goodness.
No, no, I meant for time. I'm thinking, because I have to, I have to leave at 11:15, I think, or 11. So I was just thinking maybe you could do this some other time and send it to me.
Well, sure, that'd be fine.
Because I...
But I think I better keep this one now.
Yeah, right. What was your, what is your wife's maiden name when she was a professor?
Bushman.
What?
Dorothy H. Strong, she is now.
And what was she before?
H-U-S-S-M-A-N, Husman.
Husman, I see.
I guess that's the right spelling. Yeah. I forgot.
Well, I'd like to ask you about Link. He did you think he was the most brilliant scientist here in the department?
Well, I don't think he was really much head and shoulders over everybody.
Somebody has said that. That's why I asked you.
Well, he was extremely erratic, of course. Uh-huh. He was given a lecture in the Bigby Auditorium there a while ago, and he always gets off on some foolish thing, and he's got talking about Sherlock Holmes, and there was a young lady in the front front row, and all of a sudden he pointed at her to say, "You know who Sherlock Holmes is?" She said, "Yes, but I didn't expect to see him here." As his pipe and so
forth. He and Steinbach had a falling out.
Well, yes, he did some very good work. This anticoagulant that he got from Sweet Clover was a very good job. Mm-hmm. However, Mark Stahlman did a good share of it.
He did.
Link was in the hospital with TB, you know, two different occasions, mm-hmm. almost a year at a time. And it was during that time that Stahlman, who's now retired, you know, ran his shop up there.
I see.
But, he did good work.
Did you think that Stahlman wasn't treated fairly or didn't get enough credit for it?
Well, Stahlman was the man who went over and told Link that they had to get this stuff patented if they ever expected to make any money out of it, because the time was running out.
Mm.
And so that was patented that way. And Mark did that part of it. I don't know whether he had much of a hand in the isolation and identification.
Mm.
But it was good work, all right. No question about it.
What about the, do you remember Link's discovery about mixing vitamin K with aspirin?
With aspirin?
Mm. Do you remember that?
Never heard of it.
Okay, well, that was an issue in 1951, and Steinbach, it involved Worf and Steinbach. If you don't know anything about it, then...
Well, I know that Mark, Steinbach and Link had a fist fight in the corridor.
Did they? That's pretty...
Yeah, and... somebody opened up the cages and let all the animals out that were being used, you know, for studies.
My goodness.
I don't know whether it was, I guess it must have been Steinbach's lab, because Link didn't use any animals like that. They had a lot of trouble.
Well, why were they having a fist fight?
Well, I don't know. Just peculiar characters, both of them.
Uh-huh. But...
not very decent or reasonable or sensible.
I see.
And both are very intelligent and think that they're the best, I suppose.
Yeah. What about the Link's research on calf scours? Do you know about that?
Scours?
Calf scours. It's a disease of newborn calves.
I'm not familiar with that.
Okay, it was in the newspapers and I read about it. I wondered... Well, apparently the university made it difficult for him to do the research here. He needed large animals, and I don't know, if you don't know anything about it, then...
Was that before I got here?
I'd like to ask you about the space in the building.
This one?
In biochemistry, you became very crowded, presumably.
Well, sure. I was here when they made the 39 wing.
Uh-huh.
Remember the
federal government had these work something or other.
CCC? No, I mean.
Yeah, that was kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we got money for that 39 building.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had a little place in Professor Peterson's office.
Mm-hmm.
It was another place for me, I guess.
Hmm?
In Pete's office.
Yeah.
That, I think that included the corner over here where Cleland is now.
Mm.
No, Cleland.
You were, let's see, but when your lab work, you were working in Elvium's lab, or?
Well, when I first came over, Pete had that corner down there, and that's where he put me to work.
Yeah.
And then I got an office in the extreme corner over here, and I was there for a long time, until this wing was built, as a matter of fact.
Did you, bacteriology got a new building?
Yeah, sure.
Is that they, and then you moved into their building, is that right?
Bacteriology?
Didn't you move into the space that they left?
Oh, here you mean?
Yeah.
Well, that goes way back. And Pete, of course, was a part biochemist and part bacteriologist.
Mm.
But there was just bacteriological space was up in the big building on the hill there. Where the big auditorium is, off to the left side. He had some labs up there and some students up there.
Mm-hmm.
He shifted back and forth from this building to that building.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time, we didn't even have the 39 wing. See, all we had was that real old part over there. Incidentally, I'd like to give you a little idea about some of my committee work.
Yes.
See Jim Edsall, who's campus planning committee.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, I was on that for quite a long time.
On the campus planning committee.
Yes, but I, after I'd been there for a few years, somebody, I don't remember whether it was I or someone else, suggested that we have this kind of a committee too.
Oh, yes.
Faculty advisory committee to tell the campus planning people what they thought about this, that, or the other
mm-hmm,
thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was.
I'll just read that into the file. It's the faculty. It's the Madison Campus Planning Faculty Advisory Committee on Parking.
MCPFA.
Yeah, and it's the paper on parking.
We were talking about parking stuff at that time.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't quite find the... Yeah, see, I was a chairman at that time.
Uh-huh.
And, let's see. You might take a little look and get the general idea of those things if you wanted to. It isn't.
Okay. I'd like to know, well, I haven't asked you about the department governance. Did you go to faculty meetings in the department, and did you...
Here?
Yes.
Oh, sure. Didn't I show you this business about that? Yeah, this thing under here.
Yeah.
This is an example of the sort of things that I was doing in our own committee.
But that's on building, is that right? That's the building.
That was just one of my committees.
Oh, I see.
Here. This is a suggestion that I made.
on the library.
It worked out very well. Everybody uh-huh. accepted it. And
so this was in 1951, and you established a library.
There was a little library, but... we didn't have enough money to get all the different scientific publications and all the serials
mm-hmm.
that were pertinent here. And the students didn't have enough money to buy it. But the professors would buy one of this and their two of something else, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, why don't you put them in the library then?
Mm.
And I went over. We've been doing it ever since.
Really? It really works, does it?
Sure.
But do you mean you don't get money, you use your own money for your subscriptions, sure, and then you contribute them?
You always do.
Oh, that's very good.
Well, sensible.
Yes, of course. And this is the...
Let's see what's on this, the one here.
That's the list of the journals.
Yeah, that's what we got. Well, yeah. There wasn't anything like that. See all the different people that subscribe to them?
Mm-hmm.
Strong. There's 2, 4, 6 mm-hmm. of them I
yeah.
was taking.
Yes.
Well, you've got to keep up, you know, in your own mind.
Of course.
That was a simple and practical way to do it. We keep the door locked now,
yeah.
And Andy is the chairman of the committee, the library committee, mm-hmm. Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there are various things like that I've done along, you know, it seems sensible.
Mm-hmm. And do you get money from the university library budget at all?
I don't think so, at least I never heard of
yeah.
it.
Yeah. So you went to faculty meetings and were, let's see, the chairman were first Hart and then Elvium, the chairman of the department.
The departmental meetings. Yeah.
Yeah,
I never was a chairman. I don't want to be the chairman.
You didn't want to be chairman.
No, I don't like that.
Uh-huh.
I was the chairman of this committee here and I wanted this building committee, but I more or less listened, and if I thought something was real foolish, I'd try to change it,
mm-hmm.
of course.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't go for that kind of stuff.
Mm. Did you go to the Ag College faculty meetings? The Agriculture College?
Yes, sometimes. But these faculty meetings didn't have much of a direct effect on my own work.
Mm.
That's what I wanted to get done.
Yeah. Did you, how did you feel about the other departments in the Ag College? How close did you feel as a...
In relation to the
yeah.
others? Well, as I told you, when anybody came along with a problem that I thought was in my line, I was glad to work with them. And I'll give you one good example. A farmer up near Hortonville had a lot of dairy cattle, and in the fall, fed them the corn that had been harvested, and it wasn't long after that that they began to die. So we went to his nearby veterinarian, and the veterinarian couldn't figure out any trouble. So they sent some samples of the corn or the cows or both down here to that, you know, on the Middle Point Road, and you were
mm-hmm.
on the left side there, there's a big one for testing. Well, they went through it and they couldn't find anything. So came to the campus here, and it was finally solved in my laboratory.
Mm-hmm.
They took some of the corn, which was moldy, over to the vet science building, and a man there made some extracts, I guess water, alcohol or something, and evaporated the solvent and then fed the stuff to rats, and they killed them all right, but they didn't know what it was. So then they took some of the moldy corn over to a professor in the big building over there, right across from the dairy building, you know, the great big tall one, where entomology is and so on. Well, this man was a man that that works with fungi. These mold farms.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he got some of the mold from one of these pieces of corn, and put samples in petri dishes, and then he tried to separate out the individual ones.
Oh.
And he found quite a number of different strains, and cultured those individually, had a pure strain, and tested them on rats. Well, one of them was extremely poisonous. So that answered the thing, but not the chemical part.
Mm.
So they came over here to me. and me and my boys have got the stuff out. But it's horrible. Every one of the students that worked on it, if a little drop of a solution got on their skin, gone like that. And now the Russians
are burnt, or?
The Russians are dropping them. They're dropping the same stuff on the Afghans and on the there's a tribe, Beyong or something like that. They're killing them off too, but nobody will believe it. The chemical is one of a series called trichothecines, and this one we called T2 trichothecine, because the man over here with the moles, that was his T2 was his number for that particular strain.
Oh, yeah.
It could be anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this stuff is horribly poisonous. And in connection with that kind of work, we also studied a half a dozen or so other trichothecines. Mm-hmm. And I have some monographs out on that sort of stuff. I have at home. You know this this cancer-forming mold product?
I've heard that mold can be dangerous.
Oh, very, very. These people that refuse to have any preservative in their breath are absolutely off their rocker.
Hmm.
Because if they get the right kind of mold there, it'll kill them. No doubt about it. It doesn't take much at all. You can take a milligram of this trichothecine, the T2, and dissolve it in a drop or two of alcohol or acetone, some harmless solvent.
Mm-hmm.
And you take an adult rat and scrape off a little hair and put a drop of that on there. The next day, the rat will be dead.
Mm-hmm.
1 milligram. It's pretty well known how it works. There was a fellow here, one of our professors, that's now moved over to Switzerland, and he worked it out that the white cells in the blood that produce, I guess, something that protects them against bacteria and so forth.
Mm.
Well, those white cells are killed.
I see.
Also, it's been found out now that many of the Russians themselves, the poor people, farmers and so forth, right after the Second World War, they were very low on their food. They didn't have enough to keep them over the winter hardly.
Mm-hmm.
So in the spring, when the snow was just beginning, almost gone, they'd go out in the fields where corn and other things like that were a few kernels would be lying, and they'd pick up everything they could find and eat it and kill it.
Goodness.
The Russians were trying to find out what the substance was.
Mm-hmm.
They went way off their some kind of a steroid. Well, it wasn't at all. It was this T2 toxin.
Mm.
So now they're using it to subdue the rest of the world.
Mm.
At least they're on a good start.
Mm-hmm.
I think they'll probably succeed. Might as well do the best we can.
Yes. We can't go off on a political discussion here. I said we can't start a political discussion here, or we'll use up all the tape.
No, of course not. Well, this was just a matter of finding out what it was.
Yes, that's interesting.
Farmers know we don't do that anymore.
You knew Dean Froker and Dean Pound. Mm-hmm. How would you compare them in what they did for the department and the Ag College?
Well, I think Glenn was pretty good. Volker, I didn't know so very well, and that's further back, and he was before Glenn, wasn't he?
Yes, he was up to 1964, Volker was, and then
Hill. Christofferson, was it? It was before Volker?
Yes, I guess.
Yeah. There were a lot of them, and I kind of got them.
Do you remember the upset about the home economics department? When they were made autonomous and the food science and nutrition science were moved into the Ag College, and you were asked to be one of the professor with a joint appointment with food science. Do you remember that?
No, I don't. And if I did, I certainly wouldn't consider it.
Oh, no?
Well, of course not. Why should I?
Well, you did for a while.
Go on. I did what?
You were had a joint appointment in the Department of Food Science.
Never.
You didn't?
Not to boost my
Because
knowledge.
The reason they wanted to have some respectable names. That's what they said.
Well,
it wasn't that you taught there.
Al Harper was the nutrition
yes.
man over here, and now he's moved over to the new place, you know. Mm. You've been in there, haven't you?
No.
Oh, it's beautiful. You should go.
What is that?
It's a whole new building and a whole new department, separate from biochemistry entirely. Nutritional science and something else.
Yeah.
Fancy name.
But you didn't have a joint appointment in that for a while?
No, never.
Do you remember the problem about the deanship of home economics, Dean Marshall? And
oh, they were always like this, you know. The women don't get together, don't get along very well together.
Well, Marshall was a man.
Yeah, there was a man there for a while.
His name was Marshall, and
that was a young man who worked for Dorothy. At least there was one.
Oh.
But he was kind of a lightweight.
He was.
Eventually they went. They came from down south somewhere.
Uh-huh.
Well, yeah, Dorothy worked with Miss Parsons. Mm. Remember old Lady Parsons?
Yes. Well, I don't.
She
I didn't know
her. She was a cantankerous old bee.
Was she?
She sure was. She'd give her students the devil for no good reason. And she'd make Dorothy do a lot of stuff that she could just as well have students do. Yeah, Dorothy taught a course over there. And as I said, when they developed a division or department of food and nutrition, she was the chairman.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no other chairman that stayed that way, I guess 20 years or more.
Mm-hmm.
And now they have gone over to this consumer science and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And home economics is gone. Oh, that reminds me. Dorothy wanted a woman that I've got in here, her name. No, that's not it. I'll find it pretty soon. I got some darn many little. And I've got her name and address, I mean her phone number, and I was going to suggest to you that perhaps you could get her to do it, or at least to help you.
Yes, I'd like to know who it is. You know how we could find out? Have you got a university directory? Oh, is her? I suppose
your. I don't have one in my office.
Oh, I suppose your husband's dead anyway, is he?
Senate, and then here's the campus planning committee.
Yeah.
Over and over again.
Oh, you Martin were involved Ford, a lot, yes.
I went to almost all of those. And
Who got you on the campus planning committee? How did you get on that?
Somebody asked me, I don't know. And I decided I ought to do it.
Uh-huh.
I didn't like it very much.
That was, so you didn't go so much to the faculty meetings?
I was recommended by Van Potter to serve on some of these committees that the National Institutes of Health give to researchers. And I worked 9 years, 3-4 meetings a year, and about 100 applications for each of us.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not that many, 30, 40. To go over carefully, to decide what we're going to do. And then these are the so-called pink slips that were supposed to be turned in. But I thought as a historical thing, it would be desirable to keep them. And I'm going to give them to Van, I think. I think he's got a bunch of them, too.
Huh.
See, this is pretty good, the priority score. It's not 500-600.
Mm-hmm.
And this amount of money and so on. University of Maryland and so on. Well, this has got quite a significant meaning, I think, in relation to the
work of a lot of scientists.
Mm-hmm.
I don't quite know what to do with them. I wasn't supposed to keep them in the first place. But I've never used them for any nefarious reason. There, I guess that's close enough. But I had a lot of work on that. And I don't like to go to meetings very well, and I don't like to fly.
Yeah. Oh, that's hard.
I'm not going to fly again unless I really have to.
Oh, that's right. Well, did you, let's see, how are we doing? Did you, are you, thank you. Did you, I'm curious about your reactions to things like the McCarthy era and the student protest movement. Did you?
Well, if they're not destructive, you know, like some of them have been, I can't put it like that. I mean, I can't say that I like it. No, but I think the students should have a say in what they think about things, or what's wrong, and what could be improved, and how to do it, and that sort of thing. I don't see anything against that.
Mm-hmm.
But the these goings-on down at the the union, you know, when that Negro man was here not long ago.
Kwame, excuse me. Yes, I know who you mean. I can't think of his name either.
Begins with C, I guess, or something like that. Mm. But, not more than two syllables. He had been here before, and then mm-hmm. came back, and somebody was heckling him, so
mm-hmm.
that is just simply poor manners, and it doesn't accomplish anything. Mm-hmm. A guy like that ought to be heaved out, I think.
Oh, I see.
At least of the building,
maybe
not out of the university, but if he kept it up, and I was the boss, I'd boot him right out in the middle of Lake Mendota.
Mm.
I don't like that at all. It's unreasonable.
Oh, you were... You remember they did that in the 1930s. They saw a group of students threw a speaker into the lake. Do you remember that?
No, I guess not.
You wouldn't have been involved because you
threw in a teacher.
No, a speaker.
Oh, a speaker.
They thought he was a communist and he was thrown into the lake.
That might be sure. No, but what I was objecting to in this case, I don't think it's really decent or reasonable to heckle a would-be speaker to the point where he can't speak.
Yeah.
All the other people who came there might wanted to hear him. But the one that makes such a rumpus about it, I think, is a boor.
Mm.
He ought to be mm-hmm. taken out.
I see, yeah. I thought you meant, I'm glad you explained that.
Well, I guess that's everything I might show you. This is another book that Professor Peterson and I did.
I would like to ask you your feelings about WARF, the Wisconsin Alumni Research Foundation,
mm-hmm.
which was very important in biochemistry. Steenbach started it. Did you?
Well, most of the money that comes out of it came from biochemistry.
Yes.
Yeah, sure.
Do you? So you have a proprietary interest in it, do you?
Well, the only... excuse me. I have this post-nasal drip, and I've been trying to get rid of it. It can't be done. My bones up in here are smashed all to pieces. The dull whack. When I was a kid, I must have got hit with a baseball bat or something.
Really?
And I never knew what caused it.
Mm.
But Dr. Sims says that's the origin of the infection.
Mm.
You can't get at it to kill it.
Oh, gee.
Yeah. Well, at least I can make you understand.
Yes, oh yes.
What was it I was talking about?
WARF.
Well, I think it's a very good thing. The university, you see, gets 85% of all the revenue that comes in.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, this is after their expenses are paid. But if there's any profit, 15% goes to the one who made the, mm-hmm. the discovery, and the rest of it goes to the university. I have a patent on the Adamycin. It was going good, and it still is being used. Patent has run out, however. But this poison for the fish, it came at a time when poison was a bad word.
Mm.
Everybody was afraid of being poisoned. And so they tried very strenuously to not have it used, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
this man that's in charge, I guess he's retired now, of that laboratory down on the waterfront, just there to the left of the...
yes. Arthur Hassler.
Well, the director of that was an old friend of mine. We used to walk together down here. I can't remember his name exactly.
Isn't it Arthur Hassler?
Hassler, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, he started putting things in the Cap Times that were not the truth, and were simple to get the truth.
Hmm.
And I wrote to the president and to our dean up here about it several times, and I was quite unsettled about it. This is a very desirable thing because it disintegrates by itself within a day or two or three. And yeah, of course, it'll kill other fish, good fish too, but you don't use it where there are preponderance of the fish you like. You do it the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's capable of being quite a useful thing and making quite a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
I've gotten, I guess, out of it so far something like a total of a couple thousand dollars, maybe $2,000-$3,000. That's for all these years.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's a young man that's bought out the what's left of the well. He didn't have to. But 2-3 years ago, the back was still good, so they sold it to him, and he's making it by himself with some help.
Yeah.
This is a great big batch, you know. Raise the harvest, and it isn't very hard to get the material out. It's the poison. It was also very important for the people over in the Enzyme Institute, you know, like Dave Green, and what's the other man over there now?
Henry Lardy.
Henry Lardy, yeah, he's a good man.
Yes.
Yeah, yet specific for the poisoning of the one step in the procedure by which we get energy out of the food that we eat is molecule for molecule. And there is that configure. That's as low as you can get. It's a very, very poisonous to, not a cold-blooded, but cold-blooded too. Fish are cold-blooded, aren't they?
Yes.
Yeah. They, they're particularly susceptible because they don't have very much oxygen, you know, and there's only one cell layer between the water and the inside, and it gets blocked very easily. It's about one part per million in the water that kills those carp.
You said that Green was an odd man. What was...
Well, he had a lot of ideas that were not altogether sensible that he would put out now and then. It was kind of a laughing stock toward the end.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think so. I never had a whole lot to do with him.
Mm.
I thought he was a nice fellow, you know, personally.
But he wasn't the best person then to head the Enzyme Institute.
Well, I guess he did some pretty good work, but I guess he got involved in other things that his... cohorts or did things, something like that. I don't know anything about enzymes.
Yeah, okay.
But you can see these natural products that I've been working with.
Yeah.
I picked out those that were the most active for a small amount.
Mm-hmm.
They're critical things in our environment. We have to be have the right ones in the right amount in order to be healthy.
And know about them.
Yeah. Could be good, could be bad. But something that's bad may be useful for humans. To get rid of things we don't like.
Yeah. Well, we're just about at the end of this tape, and maybe I think that's probably
late in the morning too. What else?